For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is the 20th of January. It is Tu B'Shvat. We are on page 750. We're at the bottom of the page. Perakei, chapter 5, in Parashas Noso. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe lemar, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Tzav es b'nei Yisrael, you shall command the Jews, v'shalchu min ha'machaneh, they shall send out of the camp, kol tzaru'a v'chol zov, v'chol tamei lo nafesh. Anybody who has tzaras, anybody who is a zav, it's a form of tumah, and anybody who is tamei for a soul, which means they've come in contact with a dead body. And these are three types of tumah, and people who have these types of tumah need to be sent out of the camp. Mizachar ad nekeva tishaleichu, from male to female you shall send out. It makes no difference whether the person who is tamei is male or female. El michutz lamachane tishaleichum, you shall send them out of the camp. V'lo yitam'u es machaneihem, they shall not defile the camp, their camp. Ashani shochem esalcham, that I dwell among them. That's the commandment. V'yasuchein b'nei Yisrael, and the Jews did this. V'yashalachu osam, they sent them. El michutz lamachane, out of the camp. Kasher diber Hashem al Moshe, as Hashem spoke to Moshe. Ken osu b'nei Yisrael, so did the Jews do. We have had the rules of Tuma and Tara before in regard to the Beis HaMikdash, that a person who is Tameh cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash. We had Tuma and Tara in regard to the rule that someone who is Tameh cannot eat Kadshim, that would be Karbanos, or Truma. We've had rules like that before. But now, the rules of Tuma and Tara become more intense. They also dictate where a person is allowed to be, not only whether they can engage in something that is sanctified, but it also affects where they will be. Are they able to be in a particular place? And they're not able to be in certain places. They have to leave the camp if they are tamei. Now, here, the Torah does not outline for us the various camps and their differences. The Gemara, using the various psukim, the various verses here, and the way that it's expressed, the way that it talks about leaving the camps, derives that there are three camps when it comes to the question of Tuma and Tara, of where a person can be. There is the Machane Shechina, that's the camp of the Hashem's Divine Presence. That would be where the Mishkan is. There's the Machane Leviya, that's the camp of the Leviim. That's self-evident, that's where the Leviim camp. And then there's the Machane Yisrael, that's the camp of the rest of the Jewish people. So the Gemara derives that the Tumas are not all the same. For some tumos, a person only needs to leave the Machane Shechina, only the camp of the Divine Presence. It would be permitted to be in the other two camps, in the camp of the Levim or the camp of the Yisraelim. For some tumos, one has to leave both the Machane Shechina and the Machane Leviya. They can't be in the innermost camp, and they can't be in the Levim's camp. They can only be in the camp of the Yisraelim. And for the worst types of tumah, one has to leave all three camps and needs to go out even beyond the periphery of the camp where the Jews are and go beyond that. So here only three tumas are mentioned. There are more tumos than these. Here in Pasuk Beis in verse 2 we have tsarua, that's tsaras, zav, and becoming tumah for coming in contact with a dead body. Zav is a discharge from the body. Zav happens to be referring to a man. A woman would be called a zava. Both are for types of discharges from the body that render the person tame. The Gemara tells us that as we would expect of these three tumos, sorua, zav, and tame nefesh or tame mace, the worst is tsaras. And for tsaras, as one would expect, the person must go out of all three camps. And they need to be not in any of the camps. Even in the Machane Yisrael, they cannot be there. They have to be outside all three camps.
They still get the man?
That's a good question. I don't know. That's a good question.
What was the question?
Whether they still get the man. I don't know what happens to them. The Zav is not allowed to be in the Machane Shechina, cannot be in the innermost camp, and cannot be in the Machane Levia, can't be in the camp of the Leviim. But they could remain in the camp of the Yisraelim. That means that if a person who is a Levi becomes a Zav, or a woman married to a Levi who becomes a Zava, they would have to leave their tents, leave their home, but they would not have to go completely out of the camp. They could remain in the Machane Yisrael. They could be guests at someone else's home in the broader camp of the Jews. And someone who is Tamei Nefesh, someone who is Tamei Meis, has come in contact with a dead body, is only prohibited from being in the Machane Shechina, in the innermost camp where the Mishkan is. But they are allowed to be in the Machane Levia, in the camp of the Leviim, and the camp of the Israelim, which means that practically speaking, anybody who's on the Chevra Kadisha does not need to leave home. They can remain, whether they are a Yisrael or a Levi, or married to a Yisrael or to a Levi, or a Kohen for that matter, they can remain in their home. There's no need to leave their homes. They stay where they are. It's only that they can't go to the Mishkan, but they can remain in their tents. So it makes a big difference over here. In fact, even though the way that the Torah couches it is sending a person out of the camps, the truth is that a person who comes in contact with a dead body doesn't really have to leave any camp. They just can't go into the camp of the Shechina. They can't go into the Mishkan. Of course, if they become Tamei Meis in the Mishkan itself, then they would have to exit. They would have to leave the Mishkan. This is why we will learn later when we get to the Parsha of Sota, which is coming up in Parshas Nasa. We'll get there probably next week. We'll get to the discussion of Sota. So the Sota is going to have to drink bitter water that can kill her, and she drinks it in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan. That's where she drinks it. So in the event that she did do the Avera and therefore the water is going to make her be killed, they remove her very quickly from the premises, because should she be killed, then she would make everything Tameh. And someone Tameh Meis cannot be in the Machane Shechina, cannot be in the camp of the Mishkan, of the Divine Presence. The Tzorua, the one who has Tzaras, we understand that they should be sent out of all three camps. We get that, because the one who has Tzaras is a person who has engaged in behavior that makes the person unfit to be in social company. Either they have slandered and spoke Lashon Hara, or they've engaged in other types of behaviors that make them need to improve their ways before they're able to be in social company. So we get that. And as I said already, the Tamei Meis, they're allowed to be in social company. They can remain in their homes, whether their home is a Yisrael home or a Levi home or a Kohen home. They can stay where they are. They just can't go into the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash. The question is, the other types of Tumah that are in the Zav category, the Zav or Zava category for male men or women, that category is precluded from being in the camp of the Leviim, but is permitted in the camp of the Yisraelim. Now the Zav or Zava did not do anything wrong. They had a discharge from their body. It is not a normal discharge of the body. It is a discharge that indicates some physical problem. And that discharge makes them Tamei. And it makes them tummy to the point where they can't be in either of the two innermost camps. Which means if a person is a Yisrael, they just stay home. Doesn't do anything to them. They can't go into the next two camps. But they don't have to leave their home. But if a person is a Levi or married to a Levi, they need to leave their home and go to the Machane Shekhinah. So that's a little bit more difficult to understand the Torah's requirement, or even if we're to say that we don't understand, it's just a rule, it's a law, we have to accept it like any law in the Torah. But when we put ourselves into the mindset of those who lived at a time when these rules functioned, because we had a Beis HaMikdash or a Mishkan, and we had various camps, so one therefore needs to think it through and understand what that does to people, and that a person has to leave their home, even though they did nothing wrong. They're not an evil person. Again, Saras, it's hard to feel bad for the person, even though I wouldn't be judgmental, because it's hard for any of us to say that we're perfect in the laws of Lashon Hara. So, you know, Chas v'Shalom, no one should have to experience that. But still, we understand that there's some element of Aveira involved. There's a sin involved. Okay, so a sin always has consequences. But there are types of Tumah that there's no sin involved, and they need to leave the camps, or at least leave their home, if the person is a Levi or married to a Levi. Let's first discuss the Tumah of Mace, which is not as bad. A person only cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash or to the Mishkan. Well, I mentioned this to you before, that the way we know that it is permitted for a person who is Tamei Mace to be in the camp of the Levim, we know it actually from yesterday's Parsha. Because in yesterday's Parsha, it tells us right in the beginning of Beshalach, that Moshe Rabbeinu took with him, Vayikach Moshe, what did he take? Everybody else took gold and silver, and Moshe Rabbeinu took?
Yosef's bones.
Vayikach Moshe es atzmos Yosef, he took the bones of Yosef, imo, with him. And Moshe dwelled in the camp of the Levim. And he had the coffin of Yosef with him in the camp. That's where it was. So if Moshe Rabbeinu was allowed to have the bones of Yosef in that camp, clearly that camp is acceptable. You're allowed to be Tamei Mace and be in that camp. And
where was Aaron when his sons died?
I'm sorry?
Where was Aaron when his sons died? Was he with them?
He was not in the same room as they were.
Oh. No, okay.
They were in the Mishkan itself and he was outside.
Sorry.
So it is permitted, therefore, to be in the camp of the Levim, even though one is Tamei Mace, and that's fine. But, still, a person cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash, cannot eat karbanos, cannot eat truma, a person is Tamei, they can't do those things. We see, therefore, that Tuma doesn't have to be bad. It has rules, but it doesn't have to be bad. One of the greatest chasadim, one of the greatest kindnesses a person can do is to be part of the Chevra Kadisha. A person on the Chevra Kadisha is regularly Tamei, and yet there is a law that that person cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash, cannot go into the Mishkan, cannot eat Truma if they're a Kohen, cannot eat, well, they can't be a Kohen if they're on the Chevra, they can't be a Kohen on the Chevra Kadisha, but they can't handle Truma if they are Yisrael. And they can't eat karbanos. So you see that Tumah is a way of life. Tumah is not a judgment on a person. Sometimes Tumah can be a judgment. A person has tzaras, that's a judgment. But Tumah can also not be a judgment. A person is Tamei Meis because they are doing a great mitzvah, so they're Tamei. So you see that Tumah and Tara, they definitely involve a person's ability to be engaged in sanctified things, and a person who's on the Chevra Kadisha cannot be involved in the most sanctified parts of service of Hashem, the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan, but it is not a judgment on the person, it is a fact that there is a rule of Tumah and Tara. Many types of Tumah and Tara are natural ways that people behave, and natural ways that the body behaves. so that a woman becomes tame regularly in her cycle, that's a regular way of life. That a man and woman, a husband and wife, become tame when they are intimate, that is a regular way of life. That's part of life. Tumah is part of life. That's the way it goes. And there are rules that the Torah has for those things, and each one can be taken separately to understand how it works that the tumah affects a person. Even a person, let's say, who has a job as a shaychet, they slaughter animals. So if an animal is slaughtered properly, then there would not be any tumah. But if the animal is slaughtered improperly, there can be tumah. The animal becomes not kosher, if it becomes a nevela, an animal that is not slaughtered properly, and there could be tumah involved. And so tumah is just a way of life. We don't function on that level, except for family purity. We don't function regularly with the rules of tumah and tahara. And as I've mentioned to you before, tumah and tahara creates a whole nother level of social interaction. You do not shake hands or hug a person who is tameh, if you are not tameh, because you don't want to become tameh. And therefore, when you're in shul on Shabbos, you think twice before you shake somebody's hand or give someone a hug. That's the way it goes with tumah and tahara. It's not a free-for-all. It's, oh, you know, you're tameh. I'm not shaking your hand. Just as today, a person who, you go around shaking people's hands, as I do on Shabbos, and you go around and a person says, I had a cold this week. I don't want to shake your hand. I want to get you sick. It's fine. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when Mashiach comes, it's going to be, I'm tameh. I don't want to shake your hand. I don't want to make you tameh. It creates another layer of concern in social interaction. But again, it is not necessarily a judgment. It is a way of life. Zav is a person who has had a discharge. It is not the normal way that the body behaves. It's not like the things I mentioned before that are just part of life. It is a sickness of sorts, but that creates an extra level of tumah that banishes the person not only from the Beis HaMikdash, but even from the camp of the Levim. And again, it is a way of life. I'm not trying to imply that the tumah shouldn't be looked at as innocuous. It is not innocuous. Tumah means that the person is not allowed to be engaged in the most sanctified of activities. And that means that the person has in some way a barrier between themselves and that which is sanctified. But that barrier is not a judgment on the person. It is a way of life. That Hashem has set it up. That the way life works is we go in and out of these state of beings of with a barrier or without a barrier. And that's the way it goes. That's the way that we're expected to behave when we are dealing with sanctified things. Yes?
As you say, somebody says, oh, I'm not going to hug you because I have a cold or whatever. What if they just don't say anything and they do shake your hand? Is that person responsible? He doesn't know the other guy is tummy. So.
Right. So it's similar to if a person gives you a hug and they have a cold and you get a cold. So you can't really do anything about it.
No, but when somebody has a cold, you kind of know it.
Well, you know, they don't tell you. You know,
no, but when you get a cold, you know it. When you become tameh in that situation, how do you know that you're tameh?
They would have to tell you. You're right. If you didn't know that they're tameh, they would have to. Yeah. If they don't tell you, how are you supposed to know?
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Good point.
Tameh also, yeah. Or, you know, because he didn't know and everything was.
No, obviously.
Are you really tummy?
Yeah, no. Well, you are tummy. If you don't know, you are tummy. But if you don't know, you can't be held accountable for it. Obviously, right? That's correct. The person who is tummy has a responsibility to tell people that they are tummy.
So the innocent guy, he knowingly will touch other people also.
That's true. It doesn't go that far. It peters out. It doesn't continue on and on and on. It depends on the type of tumma, but it doesn't give you. Yes. Okay.
So the zav is not any indication of spiritual malady?
As I'm trying to say, I'm trying to avoid using the word malady. All types of tumah, every single type, even the types that are normal ways of life, do indicate you have to be very careful how you pick the words away, because it's not the person's fault, but they do indicate a barrier. They do indicate a barrier. A person, even though it's the regular way a person lives their lives, they become tamei, there is a barrier. They're not allowed to be involved in the most sanctified parts of life.
When
he was involved with Yosef's bones. I mean, he had to...
Moshe separated from his wife.
Right. So that's why he separated from his wife, because he had to speak to Hashem at drop of a hat. He had to speak to Hashem. Therefore, he could not take the time to become tar, and therefore, he could not be intimate with his wife, ever. So even though we normally say, okay, a person becomes tamei, then they become tar, and then tamei, and then tar. But Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do that. So there is a barrier, and that barrier does indicate some sort of a deficiency, not a deficiency inherently. It's not that there's an inherent deficiency, but it's like not having the key to get into the room. I don't have the key because I'm tamei. I'm missing something. You have the key because you're tar. I don't have the key because I'm tamei. There is something missing.
So is a zav supposed to be examining his deeds?
So it doesn't say that a zav needs to examine his deeds. Now, because it's a sickness, so with all sicknesses, a person has to do some introspection. So, and this is a sickness that brings with it a tumah. The zav is a sickly person. It's not a person who's a zav would not be a healthy person. So there is something. There's something there. Now, all of this is, again, it's like putting ourselves into that mindset. It's a whole different way of thinking. But I want to focus everybody on the word the Torah chooses over here in giving this rule. Look in Pasuk Beis, verse 2. Command the Jewish people, Vishalchu min ha-machaneh. They should send out of the camp. And that repeats itself over and over again. The next pasuk says, from male to female, you shall send. To out of the camp, you shall send. And then, when they actually carry it out in pasuk Dal, verse 4, and they did this, and they sent out of the camp. The Torah does not address itself to the person who is tamei. The Torah does not say, if you are tamei, you need to leave the camp. The Torah says, you who are tahar need to throw the tamei people out of the camp. That's what it says. Send them out. If they don't want to go, then pick them up and throw them out. That's what it says. The onus is on those who are tar who to maintain a tar camp. Now, obviously, the understanding is that if a person is tamei, they need to leave. And the Mishnayos speak about it, that if a person becomes tamei and they're in a camp they shouldn't be in, they have to immediately pick the shortest route out. Because they're tamei. So the Torah here does not mean to say that the person who is tamei has no responsibility. The person who is tamei must leave. But it is telling that the commandment, the way it is expressed, is on those who are tahar. And the commandment is to maintain the purity of your camp. You are tahar, keep your camp tahar. So if somebody is tamei, send them out. Now hopefully you don't have to send them out. Hopefully they'll go on their own. But there is a responsibility to send them out. So when we talk about the social impact of Tumah and Tahara, it's important to understand the social impact is broader than who you can shake hands with and who you can give a hug to. The social impact is very, very powerful, because if we see a person doing something wrong, so we have a responsibility to admonish them. Hocheach, tocheach, esam yisecha. We're responsible to admonish them. However, we know that if they're not going to listen, or it's going to cause greater friction, and there'll be a greater chance of them keeping the Torah better if we don't, in their face, say, you got to stop what you're doing. And we deal with the situation delicately. We're Americans. We're used to doing things like that. In other cultures, they're much more upfront and direct about things like this. But if we see someone doing something wrong, we tiptoe around it. We're very careful about how we say things to people. And sometimes we keep our mouth shut. We don't say anything because we don't want to make the person angry or create friction. And then perhaps they'll never end up keeping the Torah. So we build that how timid we are into the mitzvah. The mitzvah is admonish them. That's what the mitzvah says. So if I see a person who's about to bite into a cheeseburger, a Jew is about to bite into a cheeseburger, Torah says, hocheach tocheach, admonish him. So why don't I admonish him? So because if I admonish him, then he's likely going to say, this religious business is crazy, I'm never going to think, right? And if I treat him nicely, then perhaps eventually he will realize the beauty of Torah and of his own volition stop with the cheeseburgers. So that's how we handle things. But here, you don't have that luxury. Here the Torah says, send him or her out of the camp. Don't treat this person with a timid way, I'm not sure. If the person is tamei and they don't know it, or they don't want to leave, or they don't know the rule, you are responsible to tell the person they must leave the camp. It doesn't matter if the person is going to get angry or upset with you. You must tell them to leave the camp. It is a responsibility upon us to maintain the sanctity of the camp. Now think about it from a social perspective. This creates friction. This means that a person who is tamei is going to be told, leave the camp. People don't like to be told things like that. Not in our culture.
But if he says no?
You got to get him out. The police have to pick him up and take him out. That's the way it goes. You know, the rule is you got to take him out. So what I'm pointing out to you, that tuma and tara is a very difficult set of rules to integrate into our culture that we're used to in the United States. Now, our culture is a relatively new culture. This is not the culture of the Middle East, for sure, but it is not even the culture of 19th century Europe. This is the culture of Western man in the 21st and the end of the 20th century. This is a new culture where everybody has to be very careful about how they talk to each other. It's a different type of, but this is not the culture the Torah is projecting in a Tumah and Tara society. We have to be prepared for that. Mitzvah Hashem, when Mashiach comes, there are parts of this that are not going to be comfortable, that we are going to be required to absorb and assimilate into our way of behaving, which are not necessarily comfortable in the way we are now. Yeah.
All right, if there's a Levi woman and she's leaving the camp, her children go with her or they don't?
It's up to them.
And where does she go? Like if she's boss Levi, her parents, she can't go back to
right.
her parents because they're there.
Right.
So where is she going?
It's good to have friends.
And when can she come back?
When she becomes star.
But and the kids go with her.
If they want to, they don't have. You know, they'll work it out.
If it's a young kid, they're probably going to go with.
Probably it depends on the case. Depends how long they're going to be tummy for. You know, these are things that you know. Zav happens to be a 7-day tuma, so that's a long time.
And then no one will talk about her because then they'll be further out.
That's right.
Ooh, good plan.
That's right. That's
how
right.
much time do they have to pack up the things and get out of there?
They didn't have as much stuff as we did.
They had to leave. Other people could bring their stuff to them later. And they had to leave. They had to leave the camp. This is something which is often overlooked about how we want Mashiach to come, and we want the Torah to be kept properly. We want to be in Eretz Yisrael the way things are supposed to be. But the way things are supposed to be it's just in general, we know that there are so many things about our culture that are simply not acceptable. We're aware of that. There's so many things that go on around us that we know are in conflict with the Torah. We are aware of that. And we try our best to insulate ourselves and do differently than the culture around us in so many different ways. But there are also so many things about the way that we think and the way that we process things that are not really 100% in line with the way the Torah sees things. And because we're heavily influenced by the culture around us. And this concept of live and let live, which is a very American concept, which I'm not suggesting we do any differently, that's our culture today. But this live and let live way of behaving is not espoused by the Torah in many situations. And Tumah and Tara brings that out in the strongest possible way. If you're expecting it, it doesn't create friction. I just have to tell you that I'll just digress for a moment. In the past year, in the Kola, we have a new outreach worker, an Israeli outreach worker, Rabbi Yossi Vakrat. And he's here to work with Israelis. The Israeli culture is so different than the American culture. The reason why we have an Israeli working with Israelis is because Americans can't work with Israelis because they're not talking to each other. It's a whole different culture. And he was describing to us his methods and how he deals with the Israelis that he meets here in Atlanta. And it is so direct. It is so in your face. And it's effective. And it's effective. People are becoming religious because he says to them directly, what are you doing? What's this business? What, you're with a non-Jewish woman? What's with you? That's the way they talk to each other. And then they go out for tea. It's a whole different culture. When the culture expects that sort of behavior, then it's not insulting. That's the way it goes. We would be very, very insulted by behavior like that because we have a different type of culture. So we have to behave our way because that's what we're used to and that's what people are expecting. But that doesn't mean that our culture is for sure correct. There are different cultures, and when you're in a different culture, you have to behave differently, and that's the way it goes. So the Torah with Tumah and Tahara certainly has a more direct expectation than what we are used to. And that's just something to take into account in understanding the broader way that the Torah looks at mitzvahs and how things go.
We both have this question. What if the mother is sent out? Are kids
tummy? It depends how every tumah has a different way that it goes from person to person. So if she interacts with her children in a way that would pass on the tumah, then they would become tummy. Usually, when tumah is passed on, it's a lower level tumah. It's usually the person who has, let's say, a zav has the tumah and he passes it on to somebody else. That person now has a lower level tumah. It's not the same level. So instead of being a 7-day tumah, it's a 1-day tumah. And then that person can't necessarily pass it on the same way that the first person was able to pass it on. So each tumah has its own rules, and which is another thing. It's complex, which is we're not used to it, so we don't know all the rules. Pasuk Hey, verse 5. One last point about the tumah and tahara before we read verse 5 is, this is, as we've seen in Parashas Bamidbar and Parashas Naso, we are setting up the camps. That's what's been going on the entire time. The various flags, which Levium go where, what they carry, what the rules are, all the different things, and how many people are in each camp. That's what we've been doing since the beginning of Bamidbar. This is contributing to establishing the camp of the Jewish people. So removing the people who are Tameh, that's part of it as well. Pasuk Hey, verse 5. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe lemar, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Daber al bnei Yisrael, speak to the Jews, ish o isha, a man or a woman, ki yasu mikol chatos ha'adam, that shall do from all the sins of man, lim ol mal ba Hashem, to, how do they translate that?
Treachery.
Okay, committing treachery to Hashem, v'ashma ha'nefesh ahi, and that person shall become guilty. This is referring to stealing money, or somehow taking money that doesn't belong to a person, and swearing falsely that they did not do what they did. That's what this is referring to. So, what is the punishment for that, or what are the consequences for that? Pasuk Zion, verse 7, V'yisvadu es chatasam asher asu, they shall admit their sin that they did. V'yishivas ashamo birosho, they shall return the principal. How do they say this here? The principal amount. Okay, they kind of left out. Okay, you shall return the principal. V'achamishi so yosef alav, and he shall add a fifth. Add on 20%. As I've explained to you before, when the Torah says a fifth, it's really 25%. It's a fourth of the principal. Once you add that on, it's now 20% of the entire amount. In other words, if a person stole $100, they have to return $125. 25 is one quarter of 100. It's 25% of 100. Once you add it on to the 100, now it's 125. 25 is one fifth, or 20% of 125. So it's a quarter before you add it on. It's a fifth after you add it on. So he has to add on a fifth. V'nasan la'asher asham lo, and he shall return to the one that he sinned against. So he has to add on an extra fifth to his payment. V'mein lo'ish go'el, if the person from whom he stole doesn't have a redeemer, la'ashiv ha'asham elav, to return the amount that he stole from to him, Ha'ashama mushav laHashem laKohen. Then the amount that he stole shall be returned to Hashem, to the Kohen, which means it's returned to Hashem, and Hashem gives it to the Kohanim. Milvad el haKippurim asheyechaper bo alav. Besides, or in addition to the ram of atonement that he also brings as a karban for to atone for himself. Now I'm going to hold off the last two psukim. We'll get to those in a minute. But this paragraph is somewhat cryptic. I've added in a lot as I'm reading over here to explain it. But that's because this paragraph really is a repeat of a mitzvah which we already had back in Parshas Vayikra. We're going to hold the place over here and turn back to Vayikra 5:64. Pasuk Yud Dalet, verse 14. This is where the mitzvah is actually introduced. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lema, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Nefesh ki simol mal, there's that same word. They will, how do we translate that? They will be treacherous, they'll commit treachery. V'chata bishkagami kachei Hashem, and they will sin we're really, really in great shape over here. I'm making a mistake. Right and left. Okay, that was still the wrong page. 566. Can't go any further because that's the end of Vayikra. 566. I apologize. You'll see the words are very similar. Pasuk Chav, verse 20. Vayaber Hashem Moshe Lemar, Nefesh ki secheta, someone should sin, Umol amal ba Hashem, commits treachery against Hashem. Now here's the treachery. V'chichesh ba'am yiso b'fikadon. He denies against his friend regarding a pikadon. A pikadon is an item that was entrusted to him. That means, let's say you give me something of yours, either I borrow it or you give it to me to watch, and then later I deny that you ever gave it to me. Meaning I keep it for myself and I deny it. I don't know what you're talking about. I just keep it for myself. Ovis esum esyad, or something that was handed from hand to hand, that would be like a loan. Ovi gazel, or something that was stolen. O ashakas amiso, or he withheld wages of his friend. All these cases are cases of money that belongs to somebody else, that somebody either maintains to them or takes for themselves. O matzah aveido, or he found the lost object. V'chichesh ba, and denied it. And v'nish ba'al shaker, there's the most important part. He swore falsely. He swore that he didn't have it, but he was lying. Alachas mikol asher ya'aseh ha'adam la'chato vahina, one of these things that a person shall sin about. V'yachiyach ha'ta v'ashem, and it'll be when he sins. He has to return the theft that he stole, or the wages that he withheld, or the item that was entrusted to him, or the lost object, or any kind of money that he lies about. He shall pay the principal, and he shall add on a fifth, 20%. To whoever owns it, yitnenu biyomashmaso, he shall give it on the day that he is found guilty. Not only that, so he has to pay the principal plus 20%. Vezashamo yavila Hashem, and he has also to bring a carbon, a sacrifice. Ayol tamim min hatzon, an unblemished ram from the sheep. Berakachol Hashem alakohen, when he's found guilty to the kohen, he brings this to the kohen. And then the Kohen will atone for him, and he'll be forgiven. Any of these things that he's done to be guilty. So there, the Torah spells out that a person who has money, takes money that does not belong to him, and he lies about it, and swears falsely, there is a three-step process to atone. Pay the principal, that's one. Pay an additional fifth, 20%, that's two. And bring a carbon, a carbon of an ayal, a ram. That's three. So here, going back to our page here on 752 in Naso, this rule is really being repeated over here. And, of course, one can ask, why would the Torah repeat the mitzvah? So the rule is, kol mitzvah shenishnis, any mitzvah that was taught and is repeated. So many times it is repeated because there are new pieces of information here that were not spoken about the first time it was mentioned. And that is the case in this parsha here, this paragraph. The reason why it's repeated is because there are two new pieces of information that were not mentioned before. One is Pasuk Zion, verse 7, V'hisvadu eschatasam, they'll admit their sin. Person is not required to pay the extra 20%, fifth, until they admit what they did wrong. They have to admit the sin. By admitting it, they pay more. If they don't admit it, even if witnesses catch them as liars, they would not pay more. So you'll say, why would I admit? So, because a person would admit because they want to get atonement. This extra 20% is for achieving atonement. That's the reason. A person who's not interested in getting atonement does not have the privilege of going through the steps of atonement. Kapara is a privilege. On Yom Kippur, we seek atonement. So we're given the privilege of atonement. But a person who rejects atonement is not given that privilege, and they would not pay the extra 20%. But there's another point that is being brought out over here, and that is Pasuk Ches, verse 8, which I did not explain when I read it the first time. V'im ein lo ish go'el, if a person does not have a redeemer to return the principle to that person, then it is returned to Hashem, who gives it to the Kohen. What does it mean, a person doesn't have a redeemer? And why would the money be given to the Kohen instead of to the person from whom the person took the money? So Chazal, our sages, explain that the intention over here of the Torah, when it says that the person has no redeemer, means there's nobody who would legally inherit this person. Now, why would we talk about inheriting this person? The person withheld wages from somebody else or stole from somebody else. We're going to talk about the person's inheritors. So that implies we're talking about where the person from whom the money was taken had died. So Reuven took money from Shimon, but Shimon died. Okay, so who does Reuven return the money to, plus the 20%? Who does that go to? Well, it goes to the person's inheritor. Makes sense. So he returns the money to the estate, and it goes to the inheritor. That's great. What if the person doesn't have an inheritor? The person has no goel, has no redeemer, has no one who would inherit that person. Then the money, instead of being paid to some estate, goes to Hashem, who in turn gives it to the Kohen. And that's where the money goes. It goes to the Kohen. So the Gemara says, who doesn't have an inheritor? Everybody has someone to inherit them, because we're all related. We're related, if not first cousins, then second cousins, or third cousins, or fourth cousins. We're all related. If we're from the same Shevet, we're related. If we're not from the same Shevet, we're ultimately related through Yaakov Avinu. Somehow we're related. We all go back to the same father. So who's not related? And the answer is?
The Ger.
The convert. The convert does not necessarily have any relatives. A person who converts and does not have a family after they convert, then they have no legal relatives. They may have biological relatives, but no legal relatives. And when a ger, if a ger converts, if a person converts, and they do not have any family, they don't end up marrying or having children or whatever it is, then when that ger dies, their estate is essentially hefker. It's for anybody to take because there's no one to inherit. Now, the person could bequeath it to somebody, but if they don't, then it's for anybody to take. It's just available because there is no legal inheritor. So what happens if Reuven stole, not from a born Jew, but from a ger, and the ger dies? How does Reuven achieve his kapara, his atonement? To whom does he return the money plus the 20%? And that's what the Torah is saying over here. The money goes to Hashem, who in turn gives it to the Kohen. And that's where it goes to achieve atonement. Yes?
Perhaps if the redeemer is the thief.
If the redeemer, Reuven stole from his brother.
Reuven stole from his brother. His brother has passed away.
And then he's the closest.
He's the one that would get it anyway.
It's a good question. I don't know. It's a good question. Nice question. I don't know the answer. So that's the other point that is being introduced over here that we didn't have in Parshas Vayikra, that if it's a ger who is the victim and the ger dies, then this is one of the matnos kuhuna, it's one of the things that Hashem gives to the Kohen. And so the atonement is still achieved, and it is achieved by paying the money to Hashem, who in turn turns around and gives it to the Kohen. The Torah ends this paragraph with two psukim, Pasuk Tes, verse 9, V'chol truma l'chol kadshei v'nei Yisrael, and all truma of all the sanctified things of the Jews, ashei akrivu l'kohen, that they give to the Kohen, lo yiyeh, shall be for him. Now that's hard to understand. Truma, we already learned before, goes to the Kohen. So this pasuk doesn't seem to be teaching us anything new. It just says the truma of all that's sanctified for the Jews that are given to the Kohen, they belong to the Kohen. Well, of course, if they're given to the Kohen, they belong to the Kohen. What is this teaching us? Therefore, Chazal tell us, this is not talking about regular truma. This is talking about bikurim. Bikurim, the first fruits, which are brought by the Jew to the Beis HaMikdash, and given to the Kohen. It doesn't tell us anywhere else in the Torah what happens to that basket with those delicious first fruits that you gave to the Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash. What happens to those fruits? What does the Kohen do with those fruits? Does he burn them? Does he give them to the poor? What happens to those bikurim? This pasuk tells us those bikurim go to the Kohen. When you give them to the Kohen, lo yiyeh, they belong to him. They are his. Another one of the matnos kuhuna, the Kohen keeps the bikurim, and they are eaten by the Kohen and by his family. They are kept by the Kohanim. They get the bikurim. And finally, v'ish es kadashav lo yihyu, each man, his sanctified objects should be for him, if you have your own, ish asher yitein la'kohen, and anything, a man who gives to the Kohen, lo yiyeh, shall go to the Kohen, shall belong to the Kohen. Again, it seems somewhat redundant that, obviously what's yours is yours, what goes to the Kohen belongs to the Kohen. So Chazal here say, really a frightening point, but also a very empowering point. V'ish es kadashav lo yiyu. A person who does not give to the Kohen, or to the Levi, or to the poor person, what they're supposed to give, lo yiyu, then that will go to that person. Which means that a percentage of the crops go to the Kohen, to the Levi, to the Ani, to the poor person. That percentage is 20%, a little more than 20%, that's what goes to the person, to the various gifts he has to give out. But nearly 80% of what he grows, he keeps. But if a person does not give the 20% that he's supposed to be giving out, then lo yihyu, they will be for him. All he will keep is the 20%. Hashem will see to it that he loses the 80%, and the only thing he will get is the 20% that he was supposed to give away. And that is a frightening threat, really, to someone who is not willing to part with what they have when the Torah demands that we give a portion of what we have to the Kohen and to the Levi and to the poor. So if a person keeps it for themselves, then that's all they will have. However, the flip side of that is, Ish asher yitein la'kohen, a man who will give to the Kohen, lo yihyeh, he will have. As the Gemara says, lo yiyeh mamon harbe, he will have lots of money. Person follows the rules of what to give to the Kohen, and what to give to the Levi, and what to give to the Ani, to the poor person. That person will be blessed with a great bounty. So this is not shocking to us. We understand that a person who's entrusted with success, with financial success, Hashem expects us to use our resources in His service. A person who chooses not to do so, Hashem says, you're not a good steward of the financial success that I gave, and therefore I'll take it away. A person who follows the rules and does what Hashem wants them to do with their financial success, Hashem says, you are a good steward, and therefore I will give you more and more and more. And so here you have a reference to that point. There are other places in the Torah where this is mentioned or referenced, but here is one of the places as well. So we'll stop here. The next part of the Torah is going to be about Sota, as I mentioned. I want to mention two things to you. I'm going to shut this off. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.